Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
19 bodies recovered, over 60 passengers and crew on board the American Airlines plane that collided mid-air with a military Black Hawk helicopter over Washington, D.C. The city mayor says firefighters are working diligently in dark and cold conditions. 300 responders are involved with inflatable boats, multiple helicopters in operation, as the airport fire chief says the rescue operation will last many hours. The jet was carrying several members of the US figure skating community, with authorities reporting it broke into multiple pieces and is now 5 to 8 foot deep in the water. The US President Donald Trump says he has been briefed on the incident and has questioned why the helicopter didn't go up or down. In a moment, we'll cross to Washington. But first, here's some of the air traffic control conversations that occurred both before and after the incident.
Fire command, the accident happened in the river. Both the helicopter and the plane crashed in the river. It's east of the approach end of runway 33.
Well, that's the air traffic control conversations before and after the incident. Jeffrey Thomas is an aviation expert and he joins me on the line now. Good morning to you.
Morning, Claire.
Thank you for being with us. Now, this is the first major commercial air crash in 16 years in the United States. Do you have any insight from what you have been seeing, what you have been watching, as to what might have happened here?
Look, it seems as though it could tragically be a confusion situation. The American Airlines flight from Wichita was coming into Ronald Reagan Washington Airport, which for listeners is right in the middle of Washington, D.C., on the Potomac River. It was coming in and approaching runway 11, which is the longest runway, 7,000 feet long. About 8 kilometres short of the runway, the air traffic control advised it to deviate and approach to runway 33, which is, if you like, a cross runway, shorter, about 5,000 feet. So it deviated off to the right and then swung back towards the runway 33. Now, at the same time, a military helicopter on a training mission had taken off, and it appears there's some confusion as to whether or not they had sighted the aircraft. They said they had it in sight, but clearly they did not, or they may have mistaken the aircraft or mistaken the fact that it was landing on runway 33, mm-hmm. not 11, because 33 takes it across the Potomac River at a certain angle, whereas the approach from the other one, they would have not impacted it at all. So there may be some confusion there, complicating matters. The military helicopter did not have its what's called ADS-B turned on, which is the signal that air traffic control picks up that enables them to track aircraft, and that's the same signal that those flight aware and flight radar apps pick up as well, that shows you where an aeroplane is in the sky. Same thing.
Okay.
It was turned off.
Do we know why air traffic control asked the plane to divert from that original landing strip that it was intending to land on to the runway?
No, we don't at this stage, Claire. It may simply have been to manage traffic. It may well have been that they had a build-up of traffic to take off on that long runway, so they managed traffic by moving it from one runway to another. But we don't know the detail of that, and that will obviously come out in time. But the helicopter that took off, which impacted the plane, changed course 6 times in the space of 90 seconds. And then impacted the aircraft. Now, the aircraft's traffic collision avoidance system would not have picked up the helicopter because it wasn't transmitting its ADS-B signal. This is how this traffic collision avoidance system, which is fitted to virtually all commercial aircraft, that's how they work. They pick up the air traffic control signal from other aircraft, computerize it and say, guess what, we're going to collide with this guy or mm-hmm. this lady, and they alert pilots to take evasive action. It's a wonderful system, been mandated since the early 1990s, and has saved tens of thousands of lives.
So it sounds, Jeffrey, as though it's very unusual to have that ADS-B system switched off, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you'd have to ask why. Why was it turned off? This was a training mission. Maybe it was a covert black operation type training mission. We don't know. It's too early to tell at this stage. But what we do know was that it was turned off. Therefore, the American Airlines flight, as far as they were concerned, there wasn't a helicopter there because they couldn't see it on their ADS-B.
Jeffrey, will you stay with us if you can? Because I want to bring in Matthew Cappucci, who is a senior meteorologist and atmospheric scientist and who lives right beside the airport. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. Will you give us a sense, Matthew, of how close you are to the airport?
I'm roughly a kilometre and a half to the northwest. I'm the nearest neighbourhood to Reagan National Airport. And just to give folks some bearing, Reagan National is about roughly 2-3 kilometres south of D.C., and so very close to the airport. I'm sort of the tallest building in the vicinity. I moved here because as an aviation nerd, I love looking at the airport, but also I travel a ton out of Reagan National. And to look out my window and see 300 emergency personnel with more police, fire, ambulances than you can possibly imagine on either side of the Potomac River flanking the airport is a scene I never thought I'd witness in modern times.
And what did you hear and see when the crash happened?
So I did not witness the crash firsthand. However, it happened at 8:56 p.m. By like 9:15, it was apparent something was very wrong. I was getting texts and calls from people, but I'd noticed so many sirens out the window, just this cacophony of sirens, people rushing towards the airport from all different directions, crews from Maryland, Virginia, D.C., all responding. But also what was really noteworthy and a little bit eerie was the lack of any airplane sounds. When you live next to the airport, you expect every 60 to 90 seconds just kind of that hum of airplanes. You get used to it, but it's like that constant white noise. It just stopped. The sky was absolutely silent, and 19 flights were redirected over towards Dulles Airport, which is on the west side of D.C. It's an international airport about 30 minutes away from downtown. And here in Reagan, there's been a ground stop and no aircraft can take off or leave until 11 a.m. at least.
Mm-hmm. Just as you were joining us there, Jeffrey was explaining to us what we know about what happened and so the clues that we're getting as to what went wrong. What's your sense of what happened?
So based on information, we know that the aircraft was landing on runway 33, which is out of the southeast. There are two or three main runways at Reagan. Runway 1 is north to south at 7,000 feet. It's the biggest one. And the 3x3 bigger jets land there. The smaller jets, which are 2x2 regional jets, like the Bombardier CRJ-700, which this was, tend to land on the shorter runway sometimes. In this case, it was coming out of the southeast, flying into the winds, which were out of the northwest. It was cleared to land on runway 33. To do that, they have to go on the east side of the river and take a left, or sort of turn left last minute, cross the river, descend, and make that landing. There was a military helicopter that was told by air traffic control to essentially confirm they could see the CRJ and then wait for the CRJ to pass. They confirmed they could see it, but they did not wait, which would indicate they lost situational awareness and were likely looking at the wrong passenger aircraft, mistaking that as the plane that they were supposed to wait for.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, does that sit with what you believe happened, that they lost situational awareness in that helicopter?
Look, that would certainly explain why they proceeded the way they did, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I get back to the fact that they didn't have their ADS-B operating, and therefore because we're talking nighttime here, lights everywhere. And of course, that's the other thing. You've got lights all over the place. You're in the middle of downtown, basically downtown Washington, D.C. There's lots and lots of lights everywhere. It could be very easy to lose situational awareness under those circumstances. But the CRJ pilots, the American pilots, would not have seen this aircraft on their traffic collision avoidance system because it wasn't transmitting its ADS-B data.
Matthew, to come back to you on the temperatures, and as I said, you're a senior meteorologist, we've been told the conditions there are very difficult. Can you describe them for us?
Yeah, so to the point of weather, you know, every time there's an aviation disaster, the first question becomes, was weather a factor? In the actual accident itself, the weather could not have been better. Winds were out of the northwest, which is great for flights landing out of the south. And visibility was great. So visibility wasn't an issue at all. To Jeffrey's point, you know, folks could really see pretty far and wide around. But when it comes to now the actual rescue and, unfortunately, recovery mission, conditions are pretty rough. Temperatures are near freezing. The water temperatures are 35.8 degrees Fahrenheit, or roughly 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius, which is inhospitable for more than, say, even 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Hypothermia would quickly cause victims to succumb. So to that end, it does look like this is shaping up to be a 60-plus fatality event.
Mm-hmm. And this will be a recovery mission. Have you seen military helicopters in that area in the airspace before now? Is it common that they would be there?
Oh, all the time. It's routine. You get used to it when you live here. And I thought to myself over so many years, you know, this airspace is just so congested. There's so much going on. Reagan National is a small airport for the amount of aircraft they process. And so they have so much to handle. Factor in the fact the president lives 3 kilometers away. You have executive aircraft around all over the place. And then, oh, wait, there are military aircraft doing exercises in this busy airspace. People have sort of for years conversed about whether or not too much was going on. There were too many moving parts. And unfortunately, today, it appears that that was indeed the case. There are simply too many moving parts at times, mm-hmm. and disasters can and do happen.
Okay, and right now you're looking at this scene where you have all of these emergency workers scrambling, still in the dark, trying to do what they can in light of what's happened.
Indeed. Sunrise is in about 2.5, almost 3 hours local time. And looking out the window right now, it's still pitch black. The only thing you can really see from this vantage point, even a kilometer plus away, is dozens of crews remain on the scene, trying their best to do everything they can. I see police boats in the water. But ultimately, at this point, it's really not looking good.
Well, Matthew Cappucci, senior meteorologist and atmospheric scientist, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Before that, we heard from aviation expert Jeffrey Thomas. I'm also joined on the line by Simon Calder, travel editor with the London Independent. Simon, as Matthew was explaining to us there, this airport is quite unique, isn't it?
It certainly is. There's 3 airports which serve the Washington area. The main international one from which flights from Dublin land is Dulles Airport, which is about 20 miles to the west. Then there is another international airport, Baltimore, Washington, to the northeast. But Ronald Reagan National Airport is, as you say, very unusual, just a couple of miles, about 5 kilometres south of the White House, very, very close to the center of Washington, D.C. It was put there in 1941 when, of course, aviation was very different. And it has, according to the airport, the busiest runway in the U.S. That wasn't actually the runway they were planning to land on last night, but it gives you some indication, as we heard in that interview, about just how complex the skies are and, of course, incredibly tightly controlled, because on 9/11, one of the hijacked passenger planes was deliberately crashed into the Pentagon, and the National Airport closed for, I think, 23 days before planes were allowed to land there again.
And Simon, thankfully, these mid-air collisions, they are extremely rare, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, I've checked back through the records. There's been roughly a rate of 1 tragedy a year this century, but the vast majority don't involve passenger jets. They involve light aircraft, sometimes helicopters. Passenger aircraft have the extremely sophisticated avoidance system, which has more or less meant that they simply never happen. Mm-hmm. And if I may, there's another aspect, which is that this is the third fatal crash in 5 weeks. And there will be people, I'm sorry, with whom I deeply sympathise, thinking, well, aviation is getting more dangerous. That's an understandable conclusion, but it is in fact the opposite of what's actually happening. This decade is the safest ever for air travel, and Fortunately, Irish and British airlines are the safest in the world. Ryanair is the very safest in terms of the number of passengers flown without a fatal accident.
Okay, well, that's a good way to end our conversation, Simon. Thank you very much. Simon Calder there, a travel editor with the London Independent, and we'll be keeping a close eye on developments in Washington across the morning. Coming up after the break, though, we're going to hear from the new Minister of State for Forestry, Michael Healy-Rae, on the clean-up from Storm Éowyn.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.